the adrenaline that's shooting off in the electricity, he captures it right there on paper.
Ladies and gentlemen, Al Hirschfeld.
Well, I've drawn ever since I could hold a pencil. Actually, all kids draw. I just never stopped.
Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm David Leopold, the creative director of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And I'm Catherine Eastman, the archives manager.
And today we have a very special guest, our very first guest here on the Hirschfeld Century Podcast, Justin Robertson, better known to just about everybody as Squiggs, an artist who is following in the grand tradition of Al Hirschfeld, and for many people is considered the Al Hirschfeld of the 21st century.
Wow. Jeez. Thank you.
That's a very nice interview.
That's an incredible introduction. I'm so happy and honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We've been wanting to have you on almost from the word go.
Wow.
And I'm glad it all worked out.
Yes.
And so for people who don't know you, I mean, I could go on and list some resume credits, but you probably know more of what you do than I do.
Oh, sure.
So I know your work appears on Broadway.com.
Correct.
I look at the cast drawings. That's a regular part now of my Broadway experience. and in many ways, I feel it's very similar to what Hirschfeld's drawings were for people for 76 years.
Right, right.
They look for the new drawings,
sure.
The new show opening. And then, of course, the other thing that you do that I love and I think is just wonderful for anybody who loves drawing but also loves theater and Broadway in particular is the Lights of Broadway cards. Those are just terrific.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so tell us more about what you do.
Sure. As you said, I post my drawings on Broadway.com as the Broadway Ink feature. That came about because Paul Wontorek was looking for a feature in the tradition of everyone's tradition of every Sunday morning looking into the New York Times and seeing Al's amazing sketches. And so we contacted each other through friends in 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. 2009, yes. And I moved to New York in 2010, just thinking that it was time for me to come in and experience the city and, you know, see what would happen. And by, you know, the summer of 2010, I had signed a contract to be a freelance consultant for Broadway.com. And then for a while, we did drawings every week, like on a Thursday. And then we adjusted our plan to just post on the morning of every Broadway show opening and some, you know, other, you know, off-Broadway shows and Shakespeare in the Park and that sort of thing, basically just kind of documenting what was going on the Great White Way. So
do you decide what shows you're going to do, or does he decide?
I have editors over at the website, and they decide. They give me a list of the shows that I'm going to go see, and a list of the press reps. So I contact the press reps and arrange for tickets beforehand, with the goal of posting the final work at midnight the night before a new show opens. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So you do get to choose. They give you a list and you get to choose.
I don't choose. They give me my assignments. So,
oh, okay.
So yeah, they assign me whatever. And sometimes I'll suggest an idea, you know, like maybe there's a replacement in a cast and mm-hmm. I say, hey, I'd love to go back and sketch this person. And they say, oh, sure. Or, you know, or no, just depending on what content that they already have going and that sort of thing.
Right.
But yeah.
So that's very similar to how Hirschfeld did it. You know, he got his assignments. People used to think, oh, he must have loved Guys and Dolls, so he'll draw that. But the fact is, he got an assignment,
sure.
And he, in that case, he went out of town to see it. You go to previews.
Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. and typically it's when the rest of the press is allowed in to see the show, when the show's frozen, you know, and they're being reviewed. Sometimes, depending on the production, depending on the creative team, the press reps will allow me to go in just a little bit earlier, so I have a little bit more time to do a sketch. But it can vary anywhere from a couple weeks before a show opens to the night before the. Basically, I'll have less than 24 hours to do a sketch.
Wow.
So it really varies. And especially, it's really kind of tricky in April when there are so many shows that are opening to meet the Tony Award eligibility.
Right.
So I think there was one April that I had to draw 18 shows.
My gosh.
And like right up there at the end, there, you know, there's like five shows opening a week kind of a thing. And so it's a big juggling act. You know, I just, you know, kind of, you know, I put this calendar in front of my face at my desk, and it has, you know, little places to mark off seeing the arranging tickets, seeing the shows, you know, and then penciling, inking, coloring, you know, and I'm just, it's just a big juggling act, but it's a fun challenge. But I typically tell my friends and family that I might be off the grid for, for the month of April.
Let's talk about how you do your work, because, you know, Hirschfeld, whenever possible, he'd go to a show. He, in his day, when he started, of course, he could go to rehearsals too.
Right.
In town, and then would see the show out of town. Or he'd go to a performance and draw there in his pocket. But he actually finished the drawing back in the studio.
Right.
And he worked, of course, in ink on board. So tell us the process of how you do what you do.
Okay, sure. Well, when I get my assignments, and I get it gets closer to the time that I'm seeing the show, I'll go online just to see what production stills are available online, and what if there's maybe even some B-roll, just so I can have in my mind what kind of notes I need to take in the theater. If there's not much available online, you know, often, you know, like for instance, Hello Dolly in this past season, they were very guarded with the photos, and so there just wasn't really anything available. So I just had to make sure that I took, you know, very detailed notes, you know, which hand a ring is on, you know, where someone has a brooch, or they wear a bow tie or a long tie or no tie, or, you know, that kind of a thing. So if I don't have that restriction and I can just look at photos for reference, I'm a little more free to take some visual notes of gestures and postures and pictures, stage pictures, and to make notes of moments that I want to, you know, consider, you know, capturing in the drawing.
Right.
So yeah, I do take a little Moleskine notebook to the theater, and I don't have the skill that Hirschfeld had of drawing in my pocket.
he trained himself.
Yeah,
he wasn't born that way.
And I've seen some of the sketchbooks, and they're fascinating, and you know, it's fun to look back at them because you can see what show he was seeing,
right?
Knowing so much of his work, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's that drawing that ended up, you know, like. Funny thing happened on the way to the forum. I saw this notebook that had that sketch in it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can totally see his scribbly notes, but what they ended up being, it was great. But the first time I was seeing a show on press tickets, it was when Bernadette Peters and Elaine Stritch went into A Little Night Music.
Oh, sure.
And I had a great seat. I was sitting like third row, you know, in the center. I was feeling very fancy, and I had my little notebook with me. And I just realized about the time that Bernadette is singing "Send in the Clowns," that my notebook is up near my eyes, and I'm drawing, you know, right there by my eyes, and I'm just like suddenly just had the realization that Bernadette could see me drawing her, you know, and I'm like, I would probably be called out for, you know, making the world's slowest, you know, bootleg photo. But so, you know, so now my notes in the theater, if you look at them, they're incredibly scribbly and just basically kind of remind me of things that I saw. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that I would, you know, would put in a gallery anytime soon. But
not yet.
Yeah. So then
the abstract squids.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. Graphite akimbo. But then I typically go somewhere. You know, either I go right home or I go somewhere where I can kind of flesh out a couple of visual ideas and for what the sketch is going to look like. And then
don't you have a problem with beer stains when you do that?
actually, quite often, yes.
Yeah,
it's often at my favorite beer hangouts in the theater district. So and then sometime, you know, depending on how long I have, I'll do a real size full-on pencil sketch, where I'm able to be a little bit free with the composition and the line work and that sort of thing. And then after that, I put a fresh piece of marker paper over that, and then do a fresh ink sketch using Pigma markers in various line widths. Then once that's done, I scan that into the computer, and I open Photoshop. And I color or do any fixes I need to do, any adjustments, you know, if the line went astray, I can, you know, trim it back, you know, that kind of a thing. And then my coloring is done using templates that have made from actual ink spatter. I'm kind of known for that, you know, and it was a technique that kind of came out of wanting to put color up quickly and make it look more interesting than just, you know, flat blocks of color.
Right.
So I literally, you know, one day with a toothbrush, I made little cardboard templates and spattered ink on the paper.
Right.
And
just like Al.
Yeah,
he would do it directly on the drawings, and you know, that, you know, which is fantastic. I'm sure he used the medium that blocks out. There's like a rubber cement kind of?
Well, he would take rubber cement and a piece of paper. He'd cut out the paper and rubber cement it on. And of course, that was great when he did it.
Uh-huh.
But within a year or two, at that any place the rubber cement turns brown.
It turned brown, right.
And so I used to chastise him every once in a while.
Well, you know,
it's like seems, he couldn't make a stat.
You know? Right. Well, it seems like, you know, especially, you know, in the golden days of his career, that he was just creating it for the moment, you know.
Yes.
Right. You know, so it didn't really kind of matter. You know, and having seen a bunch of the originals, it's fun to see the little places where he's, erased sections that, you know, he decided not to ink,
right.
Or the ones that places where he inked and then whited it out, you know, use some sort of a white, you know, thing. It's fascinating to look at those originals. But I have, with the technology today, it's, you know, what I do is kind of a blend between the traditional and the digital.
Sure.
A little bit like the art form is you know, drawing what's on Broadway today and coming in the future, but giving a nod to Al's work and the work of many other caricaturists in the past and Broadway of the past as well.
Sure.
I
always thought the paint splatter was also a very, almost like a theatrical...
energizing.
Well, you know, that's what you do on set.
Sure.
You know, you splatter paint them because that looks better in the light. And
right.
I always thought, oh, he's making a comment on the theater.
It is a little bit like that. It does, and it also has. I often think of some of the layered texture that I put in as kind of like theater dust. You know, almost like, you know, the ephemera of the, you know, of what's come before, and you know, not getting too deep. I don't want to get too, you know, fancy.
Go ahead, we like deep.
but yeah, it's, you know, it's just a nod to what's come before, and you know, hopefully looking to what's coming in the future. So,
how did you get started? I mean,
right. Well, quick background. I could blab on about this, I guess.
Don't worry, we can edit it.
Sure. Talking about myself? No, I would never.
Let's get back to me.
Enough about you. Enough about me. What do you think of me?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That, so I grew up in a small town in Oregon, and as I grew up, my parents were fantastic about encouraging us in anything that we really enjoyed doing. So I got, you know, classes in, you know, home ec and early days of computers, personal computers, and, you know, piano lessons for 8 years, which I was an awful practicer. But I can now read vocal music, so that's a help. My folks saw that I like to draw, so they got me some classes with the local art teacher Greta Morley in Lebanon, Oregon. And
thank you, Greta.
Yes, thank you. She's left us since, but she's I carry her on. So yeah, so she taught me, among other things, some watercolor techniques, and I entered a painting of a clown for the local art, you know, our Strawberry Festival art competition, and I got a blue ribbon, which I think that's probably, mom probably has that somewhere in a box, and then I would do church and school plays and that sort of thing, so theater was always kind of a part of growing up.
So you were a performer too?
I am, yes, absolutely. And the balance has shifted quite a bit to the art, but I try to do something every year or every other year. Most recently I was out at the Cape Playhouse in it was not this past summer but the summer before, playing Marcellus in The Music Man. And also just, you know, at a Hirschfeld sideline with that, you know, he was known for drawing regional theaters.
Yep.
You know, and when I go to see a show like Bucks County Playhouse or, you know, or the Cape Playhouse, I love going and looking at those sketches and then seeing what's still there, you know. And so with Hirschfeld's drawing of the Cape Playhouse, it's a bunch of, well, first of all, you know, you see the architecture of the building, but it's a lot of backstage scenes. You
right.
know, there's people waiting for a haircut, and there's Corrines, you know, sunning themselves on the grass and stuff. And so I went and I took pictures of all the places where I think that he was looking at when he
nice.
Do that. So that was kind of a fun
cool.
thing. But yeah,
Broadway.com should have you do summer theaters they used to do for Al, for the Times and the Herald Tribune.
Yeah.
Because there's so many, I mean, it's really, we're going in through a real renaissance of summer theaters, like the Cape is really back stronger than it's ever been.
Absolutely, yeah.
And same thing with the Bucks County Playhouse.
Right. It's some really great stuff being done there. And I know that Broadway.com does feature, you know, they typically do some sort of a feature of what's coming in the summer. So make your travel plans, go to these theaters and stuff. So yeah, so that's fun. I I do enjoy getting on stage, and I need to do it a little bit more. But for now, I'm happy with.
So you were a performer, and you were drawing, and playing a little piano when you probably should have been playing more piano.
Sure.
So what happened then?
Sure. Well, I went to college in Southern California, a little private college called Biola University, and I started as a film major. Actually, I was wanted to make movies, and I after a while I found that it was a bit more technical. I don't have an incredibly technical mind, and I was kind of lost a little bit in that aspect of it. I'm like, don't you just point a camera?
Right.
You know, but so I switched to a drama or theater emphasis in the middle of my college years, and was doing some of the school musicals and which were extracurricular. They were actually part of the theater program. But I played Barnaby and Hello Dolly and Lamar and Godspell and stuff.
Yeah.
And
rock?
But the school would occasionally rent the local theater complex for the shows, including Hello Dolly and a few other things were happening. I was starting to get obsessed with the work of Stephen Sondheim, you know, and maxing out a credit card, seeing shows and buying cast albums.
Wow.
And buying libretti and books and stuff it was a theatrical book club. I forget what it was called.
Fireside.
I think it was Fireside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so all this was happening at the same time I was starting to do these shows, and we'd use the La Mirada Theater. And hanging in the fly loft of the La Mirada Theater was this large painted flat it was Al Hirschfeld's 1977 drawing of Stephen Sondheim.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I was like, what is that? And so
unlicensed, let me tell you.
I'm sure it was, but
we're going to be calling.
Yes. Yeah, right. I don't know if it's, I think it's, it disappeared after a while, I think, with theater management.
Always do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I found out that it was used for a one night concert at that theater in 1982 that featured Broadway actors singing the songs that they introduced on Broadway. Oh. It was hosted by Tom Bosley, it opened by Ethel Merman, who sang Everything's Coming Up Roses. Mary Martin sang Do Re Mi with the kids, including her granddaughter, who, as Mary says, is making her stage debut. and Glytis Johns and Len Carreyrou. It was
wonderful.
Great. But then when the ladies from Company sang You Could Drive a Person Crazy, when people were doing their numbers, their Hirschfeld would fly in behind them on a flat, and that's how they used it in the show.
Oh, great.
And typically if it was Ethel, it was like, you know, iconic image of her Annie, Get Your Gun and Mary Martin and Sound of Music. When the ladies, Donna McKechnie, Susan Browning, and Pam Myers sang You Could Drive a Person Crazy, they flew in this image of Sondheim.
Aww. Right.
I went to my book club, the Fireside Theater Book Club, and it was when the Hirschfeld book, Art and Recollections from Eight Decades, was out. And I bought that, and I started a new obsession. It was like Sondheim cast albums and Hirschfeld books. And then flash forward to my very first visit to New York City in 2004, the first lithograph that I saw when I walked in the door was that very same image.
Oh, the Sondheim.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, man, I need that. And I looked at the price tag and I was like, I don't need it that much.
Yeah.
But then over the time I was here, I talked to many friends and talked to my mom on the phone. And, you know, I had the money at the time, and I was like, I can't spend this much money on this. And they were like, you need this.
Aww.
And so I bought it. And so
yeah.
I own it.
Really
so
yeah, cool.
yeah, yeah. So yeah, so that was, you know, kind of at the time where like the passion for what I do now was born, it was all kind of wrapped around that image, you know? Mm. So it was kind of like a touchstone for
very
my future.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Well, so, and then, you're doing this work. When did you start drawing yourself? When did you start drawing theater figures?
Right. Well,
or caricatures.
Yeah. Well,
did you always do caricatures?
I always drew. I mean, I think was it Al that said artists are children who just never put down their crayons?
I've seen that quote many times, attributed to Al, and he may very well have said it, but I can't say where it's from.
Well, also in our theme song intro, he says, "All kids draw. I just never stopped."
Right.
Right. So it's a version of it. Yeah. 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 But I always drew, and, you know, I would I would draw my friends and family members and teachers, you know, like mini caricatures.
Were they straight drawings or were they caricatures?
No, they weren't necessarily. I mean, if you look at some of my earlier stuff that I'll mention here in a bit, they are much more straight, versions of a person. Mm-hmm. And still, I'm not I don't exaggerate nearly as much as some, Hirschfeld sketches or some other caricaturists. Sometimes I do. It just depends on the subject, I guess,
Sure.
But I first started doing kind of what became what I do now when I first was doing theater outside of school. The summer before my senior year in college, I auditioned for one of the resident theater companies at that La Mirada Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it gave me more chance to look at the Hirschfeld Sondheim. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was doing my very first show, which was the Jestin Copet Phantom which I loved, and I just loved being in the show. I was so grateful to be there, and I was on closing night. I was like, I want to give a gift to my fellow cast members. I'm like, I know, I will draw them. And so I drew a picture of them, and it's all very much like a family portrait looking kind of thing. I've definitely come a distance from that drawing, but it got a positive enough reaction from my friends there that it made me want to do one for the next show and the next show. So now I have I started this tradition that now has really been a blessing to myself, because I can go back and look at all these sketches, and they're probably like 60 or 65, something like that, over the years. And I can go back and I see where I put in inside jokes and little references to someone had a baby, somewhere around the run, I'd maybe put in a little baby picture or little things like that. It's kind of what these Broadway drawings do. It's just trying to capture a moment in time, mm-hmm. in a way that definitely a photo couldn't recreate. So,
mm-hmm. Right.
And after a while, people started asking me to draw their shows that I wasn't in, I started making a little bit of money doing it, started getting asked to do shows that were in New York or Chicago, and I was like, oh, I should maybe put some effort behind this. So about 2006, I actually drew like all of the nominated musicals that year, and just like, just sent them to the stage doors said, hey, I did this, give this to these people. And, I got some really lovely notes from Lishans when she was in The Color Purple.
Mm.
One from Danny Burstein, who's become a friend now. When he was in Drowsy Chaperone. And so it kind of just started, expanding my horizons and what I could possibly do with this. Flash forward to a friend of mine, David Quinn, who's is a fantastic guy and a great idea man. He came up with this idea. He said, "What did Hirschfeld have, for exposure? He had a weekly platform, and now, granted, it was the New York Times, so
it's a big exhibition.
It's a big exhibition space, yes. And he's like, but with technology now, what do we have? It's free." And he's like, use Facebook. Like, post something on Facebook every week.
Mm-hmm.
It's only going to cost you your time and effort.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's great. So for just over a year, I posted something weekly. And it just, if it was someone I wanted to celebrate or a show opening or a birthday or anniversary of something involved with Broadway, I posted it. And that's where Paul Wontorek first saw my work.
Mm.
I started coming to the city to take part in the Broadway Cares flea market, which is a fantastic event that happens every September. And through that, I met Susan Blackwell, who does a video feature for Broadway.com. She introduced me to Paul, and then that's when we started talking about doing the regular feature.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's a great story.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Now, what were you doing? Maybe it's not significant, but what were you doing while you were doing the Facebook drawings? What was your day job, or what were you trying? Where were you headed to?
Well, probably when I started doing that, I had.
Were you more a performer at that point?
Absolutely.
Did you see yourself more as a performer?
I did, absolutely. Yeah, I was making my living primarily as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
I got my equity card in 2004 out at the Music Theater of Wichita, which is a fantastic theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm playing Cogsworth in Beauty and the Beast.
Aww.
And I was also doing various gigs at Disneyland in Southern California.
Wow.
I was a sub for the Dapper Dan's Barbershop Quartet.
Aww. Yeah,
and in 2004 as well was the year that they mounted the Snow White, an enchanting new musical, directed by Eric Schaefer of the Signature Theater in Arlington.
Wow.
And I played a dwarf. I was the original Happy. And that's actually because of that gig is why I had enough money to buy that Hirschfeld litho.
No. Thank you, Disney.
Thank you, Disney. Thank you, Mickey. But yeah, so that's kind of, you know, where it started. But yeah, I was primarily a performer. And there were actually years that I would make a little bit more money doing the artwork, depending on the gig that would come. So it was kind of a pendulum. And now it's, you know, the artwork is primarily my thing. And,
sure.
And stuff.
But do you feel that being a performer really helps you with your drawings? I mean, do you have a better sense of the performers on stage?
I think so. I think I do. I think I have a good idea about what makes a performance tick and what goes into creating a character. Also, what goes in technically to creating a show. One of the things that I try to do in my sketches, which I know that Al was amazing at, was giving a nod to the designers of the show. You know, Al was so good at drawing architecture, and you know, some his detail in the background of some of those drawings of, you know, cornice work and you know, it was just astounding. And I'm not as good at that, but I still try to, like, with my color palette of each sketch, I try to mirror what the color palette of the show is. If it's a more kind of a gentle, muted show, it's typically the color palette will be a little more muted. You know, if it's a really bold, flashy show, it might, you know, the colors might be bolder and that sort of thing. And also just, you know, choices that like a costume designer would make, you know, and where a brooch is on a lapel or that kind of thing. So I think as a performer, I definitely have seen the, you know, how theater's created, you know, from the ground up, and so I think that does definitely help visualizing what I'm going to do. Like, for instance, when I was drawing Porgy and Bess with Audra McDonald and Norm Lewis.
Great production.
Yeah, fantastic. And they there's a moment, actually a couple of times, where across the stage, Porgy would, like, reach his hand out to Audra. And that's what I based the sketch on. That moment happened a couple times, and I was like, that was such a just lovely, powerful moment. Mm. I'm like, okay, that's what I want to center this piece around.
Right.
It's about kind of trying to capture those moments, you know, that, you know, may be different each night, you know, but, you know, it definitely will be gone once the show closes someday. Right. So
Then do you use press photos to make sure you got the facts right?
I do. Okay. And or sometimes I will, you know, send an email to someone, like I was drawing The Dresser,
right,
starring Patrick Stewart. It was a number of years back, and T.R. Knight. And there was a scene that I wanted to use as part of my sketch. There's like a lifeboat scene in there. And I realized I hadn't taken good enough notes, and I didn't have any photos at that particular moment, or at least what I needed to see. And so I didn't know what Patrick Stewart wore on his feet. And this is what I want the sketch to look like. And I remembered my friend Moira McGregor was working on the show in the costume department. Mm. I think she was the costume coordinator for the show. And I just sent her an email. I said, hey, what does Patrick wear on his feet in this scene? Yeah. And she sent me the costume breakdown for that scene. Like, you know, and they're like, oh, good, black socks.
Excellent. You got it.
So, yeah. So it's, you know, it was one of the first times where I was like, oh, yeah, this theater community is really kind of small.
Right.
You know, and people are very helpful. You know, it's you know, that's one of the great things about the Broadway community is they chip in and help. You know,
right.
Really,
well,
big, really
have
big
the
hearts.
Same sort of passion for it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then also being in the theater, you're taught empathy. You're taught to walk in other people's shoes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the skills, or the skills that that an actor or a theater professional needs, is just to be able to tell someone's story by kind of walking in their shoes.
Right. And I think shows create communities. You know, there are sometimes these temporary communities.
Right.
But that, you know, all of a sudden for 4 weeks of rehearsals and however long of a run, you know, you're part of something.
Absolutely, yeah. It's having been a part of some of these community or these families, it's a very powerful thing, and it's something that you don't forget. You might not, you know, once the show closes, you might not see each other every day, but there's definitely that connection that you have with someone.
Sure.
Like, for instance, I was so incredibly sad that Groundhog Day closed as early as it did. I would really love that show.
You went to it a lot of times, didn't you?
I went five times. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I really
it's
enjoyed
like Groundhog Day. Just keep coming back at the same same thing.
Well, you heard the story about Bill Murray going to see the show.
Right, and came back.
The next night wearing the same outfit.
No.
He's like, I thought it would be funny. That was great. But that was such a lovely group of people in that show, involved with that show. And in fact, I think as we're recording this tonight, there's a concert where they're singing together. But it's just a great example, and it happens time and time again. But how a theater cast and crew and everything becomes a little family.
Right.
Yeah, you're in close quarters. In the backstage at some of those Broadway theaters, you know, it's like dress rooms are, you know, sometimes closet sized. So you know each other's quirks, and you know about each other's families and friends and backgrounds, and yeah, you just it's very much a tight knit thing. So,
And so along with the cast drawings that you do, what other works do you do? Where can people see your work?
Sure. I have a website that I don't maintain as much as I should, but it's squigsonline.com, SQUIGS online, all one word, .com. I try to post, you know, a good sampling of what I do there. But over the years, it's included posters. I did a couple of seasons of posters for Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS events. Mm-hmm. I've done 7 posters for the annual Theater World Awards, which, you know, for those of you who might not know, recognizes distinct debuts on Broadway and off Broadway. I did the cover of the Actors Equity Centennial book, the Actors Equity Association, the, you know, stage manager and actors union. It was a project that took over almost a year of back and forth of figuring out what it was going to be.
Al did the 75th.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that. I'm honored. That's cool. One project that is just happened this last year for the first time, and hopefully it'll be an annual thing, is a Tony's a season highlights CD, which is a compilation of songs from the shows of a particular season. And so this past year, it ended up being a last minute thing because it was very new. But Broadway Records is doing this, and they worked with each individual, you know, company and, you know, of various record companies to put this together. And it's the inspiration was the Grammys CD that they do every year.
Sure.
But yeah, so we created this cover for the CD that's it's little snippets, original sketches of all these different shows and that sort of thing. And then each individual piece of that cover is used in the interior because each show has their own page.
Oh, nice.
So they're hoping that's going to, you know, take place every year.
Right.
And
while we still have, you know, hard copy.
Right. Music. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, one thing that we did, and this will transition to another thing that I do, is when they first released the CD, the hard copy CD, if you bought the hard copy, you got a limited edition Lights of Broadway card. And so it was one that we created just for this event, and they, like, the first 1,000 new CDs that were ordered, they included the card.
Cool.
But yeah, that's another thing that I do is the Lights of Broadway,
yeah,
as you mentioned.
Well, that.
So, yeah, that's totally new and different, something that Al Hirschfeld never did.
Sure, yeah. It's there have been trading cards of various types over the years in relation to Broadway. Playbill has done a series of, you know, they use the key art for the, you know, the posters on a card.
Sure.
The cast of Newsies had cards for the Newsies and the Oldsies, as they call themselves, and, you know, something to interact with their fansies, which is actually their official name.
Okay, calm down.
Yeah, but, you know, and so the idea has been around, but I had this idea, I was doing a production of Damn Yankees back in 1996, something like that, 95, anyway, and if, instead of a typical cast sketch, I made little baseball cards of everyone in the show.
Aww.
So, and so that was kind of bouncing around in my head for a while, and I met my collaborator on the cards now, Dori Berenstain. She's a wonderful Broadway producer, documentarian. They've just announced The Prom that's coming in, not this season, but next season.
Right.
Also Halftime, which is going to be at the Paper Mill Playhouse. She was a lead producer on Thoroughly Modern Millie and Legally Blonde and many, many other things.
And she has a Hirschfeld connection because when she did her Carol Channing Larger Than Life documentary, she animated Hirschfeld drawings of Carol.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that documentary is great. And she also did Show Business. It followed the four different shows on the way to, from creation to the Tonys and even after that, of the 2003 season, which is fantastic. If you can find it, you know, check that out. It's it follows Wicked, Avenue Q, Taboo, and Caroline or Change. It's really really fascinating.
About three out of four ain't bad.
But that's part of the reason that they, you know, they followed them is like how, what makes a, you know, a show a success on Broadway, and maybe an artistic success might not be a financial success, and vice versa. She also the documentary Got a Dance, which became the musical Halftime, with the original, some of the original songs were written by Marvin Hamlisch, and are being used, you know, posthumously, of course. But she, we met, actually it was another Broadway flea market find, because her children stopped by my table. I wasn't even at my table selling, you know, it was where I was selling prints and that sort of thing. And they bought a print each of some of their favorite shows from the previous season, took them home, and their dad, Mitchell Canold, saw this these prints and called me and asked me if I could do a last-minute birthday gift for Dory. Aww. And we called it Dory's Fan Club, and it's her on stage with so many people that she's worked with out in the audience and giving her a standing ovation.
Aww.
And so so after she received that, she called me and asked me to lunch at Sardi's. And and we just started, you know, throwing out ideas of stuff that we had, and we both had been thinking about trading cards. And because we both collected baseball cards as kids, and, you know, I had the Damn Yankees, you know, call back there. But they, so we started talking about it then, and it took like maybe 3 years before I decided to really like put some, put my nose to the grindstone and come up with a design and a look and that sort of thing. But without it being official, we, you know, we kind of call it Sardi's in your pocket, you know, because we do celebrate not only actors and directors and writers and choreographers and design, but we also celebrate designers and ensemble members and special, you know, key people in the world of Broadway and that sort of thing, as well as shows, and not just of today, but also of the past. So it's...
Well, how often do they come out?
We do two editions every year, one
in
the spring.
And how big is an edition?
It has varied between, I think, 80 and 130 cards each edition.
So you have to do 80 to 130 drawings for these cards?
Yes.
I didn't know there was, it was that, I thought it was like 20 in an edition or something.
No, it's quite a few. They, some of the artwork for the, especially for the shows that I've done of the recent shows, I'm able to then use that artwork as that show's art on the cards. So so anytime I can do that, you know, depending on if we're getting close to the deadline, I'm like, oh, I just can't draw Man of La Mancha, a fresh sketch of Man of La Mancha. So let's put in something that I did recently, and so that's a nice cushion to have. But we have the autumn 2017 edition, which will be our sixth edition, will be coming out. We're hoping right around Thanksgiving, but definitely in time for holiday shopping.
Christmas. Yeah. Oh wow, very
cool. So now the cards feature a Squiggs portrait on the front with the logo and who the person is, and on the back. It has, they don't have about what, how they bat or what their averages.
another bad average.
But it's a little bio?
Yeah. The format that we have now, we have stats and we include their birth date, you know, not the birth year, you know, because some people don't want to share that.
Right.
But the birthday and birthplace, and then their Broadway debut and the year of their Broadway debut. Mm-hmm. And then a little short bio, and then a couple of fun facts. We'll call them Did You Know? You know, so a little couple little fun facts. So you're looking at it right now. We did a special. Actually, it's a super rare card in this last edition. Yeah, of the esteemed Al Hirschfeld.
It's awesome. It really is. Obsessed with it.
I do love it. And why don't you read the back?
Oh, okay. So it says Al Hirschfeld, born June 21st, St. Louis, Missouri. The bearded Lion King was renowned for minimalist ink caricatures of entertainment celebrities for most of the 20th century. His illustrations, many of Broadway stars and shows, famously appeared in the New York Times, on Playbill, and TV Guide covers, and more. He was awarded two Tonys for 50 years of theatrical cartoons in 1975 and the Lifetime Achievement in 1984. Did you know, on what would have been his 100th birthday, the Martin Beck Theater was renamed in his honor?
I did know that.
Squiggs, did you know he was famous for hiding his daughter's name, Nina, in drawings? But in a portrait of her titled Nina's Revenge, there are only two each of Al and Dolly, her parents' names.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
I should give a shout out to Amanda who writes our copy.
Oh, very nice. It's really terrific.
And so who's the audience for these? Who do you typically see?
Well, you know, when we started doing this, we realized the audience kind of was us. I mean, just we thought it would be a fun, novel idea. What we didn't realize at that point was that they would become so popular with young people. Mm-hmm. The first time that we had them available at a Broadway flea market, I had my prints there and we had these cards and at that point the cast of School of Rock was in rehearsals and a gaggle of young musicians came over and they started buying packs and trading them and you know it was like their Luca Padovan who played the costume designer in the show. I remember at one point they're trading and he yells, "I got a Stephen Sondheim, he's the king." And I had to turn around and cry because I was like, this is like,
well, there it is. You had seen Hirschfeld's and it meant so much to you. Mm-hmm. And here was the next generation looking at your drawing of Sondheim and having the same experience.
Yeah. Big full circles right there. Very and so, yeah, cool. So then we started realizing just how popular these were. I was getting messages from child wranglers at Broadway shows and they would say, I think it's Gypsy of the Year competition every year. There's the one event that they have. They hold a moment of silence for victims of AIDS, and it's every year. It's why am I blanking on her name? Judith Light. How could I forget Judith Light? But yeah, she does this moment of silence every year. And backstage, the kids of various Broadway shows were getting ready to sing in a choir to sing. I think it's Help Is on the Way. Or it's a David Friedman song, but they're all standing back behind the curtain getting ready to go, and they said they announced Judith Light, and like three children go, "I have her card."
Oh my god!
You know, or like you know the Vanessa, the child wrangler at Fun Home sent me a message saying, "Oh, we're learning about John Kander today,"
aww.
And I was like, "This is perfect," and it's become an educational tool.
Yeah.
Kind of, and over the editions, we've ramped up that kind of little facts and that sort of thing.
Mm.
But then also we have, that you're kind of in the college kids, people studying theater, you know, some of the folks that are just obsessed and come in and see Broadway shows all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Middle-aged to elderly people, it's like it's really fascinating just the width, the breadth of the demographic for this and who's buying.
I remember at Broadway Con in January, mm-hmm. last January, you came out and you had cards and all of a sudden I thought, oh my God, they're going to devour him. There were all these people, because they weren't kids.
Yeah.
They were people. There were all kinds of young, old. Everybody wanted some cards.
Yeah. And we've gotten really lovely comments from folks that that said that they collected baseball cards as a kid because that's just what their friends, their brothers and sisters and stuff, that's what they collected. And they weren't really that crazy about baseball, but that's what you did.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're so happy to have something on these cards that we're passionate about and love learning about and that sort of thing. Just having something tangible, that they can have in their hands and to remember what's going on the Broadway. Mm-hmm. So
now I have to ask you this because we're always asked this. Has anybody ever complained?
I don't know if I want to get too specific.
That's fine.
But we had a couple of comments first from some of the cards that like the my depiction wasn't incredibly flattering, and I these couple cases I looked at it I said they're kind of responding to, I tend to use a lot of much more than Hirschfeld did was a lot of strict angles, pointy,
much more angular.
Yeah, mm-hmm. pointy chins and square jaws, and sometimes the eyebrows are just a little more angled than definitely heightened, kind of a thing. And so sometimes people will look at that and think, oh, that's making me look severe. And mm-hmm. I understand that, but to me, it's like I think, oh, I'm that's just my style. And I'm kind of trying to capture them, their essence, and I'm not trying to make them look severe. But it's just a stylized way of representing someone.
Sure.
It's funny. We often worry about, especially in depicting folks with big Hollywood careers, because there are a number of people that have Broadway ties that have gone on to do amazing things in film, but then
they're dead to us if they go to Hollywood.
No, that's not true. Often they come back.
We do Hollywood too.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but they. sometimes we'll get photos posted of the cards that our collectors will have gotten autographed. Right. And so when I'll see that someone's autographed their card, I'm like, oh, they've seen it and they like it enough to sign
to
it.
Sign it. Right. Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I think I okay. Yeah. So, you know, some of those folks, like I think Barbara Streisand.
Wow.
Carol Burnett. James Earl Jones, you know. Yeah. I totally geeked out the first time that I saw that Hal Prince had signed one of his cards.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
And then I went to a book signing. He put out this really great book of recollections from his career. And I went to the book signing and got to give him a few cards and actually had him sign one of my cards. And he's like, I love these things.
Oh, very terrific. Cool.
Yeah, he's such a great guy. And I drew him with his glasses on his head.
Of
as
course.
He's, you know, very known for, I'm sure. I'm sure.
And drawn by Al.
Like
yeah, exactly.
Just like the Hirschfeld.
And so, what do you see are your influences? Obviously, you talk about Al, but sure. you have a distinct style. You are not some sort of warmed over Al Hirschfeld. You are definitely Squidge.
Thank you. I'm definitely. There have been times where I've really, you know, tried to mimic what Al does, especially when I was doing just strictly black and white work. I know Al is known for color work as well, but really his iconic work is the black and white simple line drawings. And in fact, there was a production of Guys and Dolls that I did many, many years ago, where it was almost a direct quote of his original. His original.
You will
Broadway.
Be hearing from our lawyer.
Well, I changed enough. I had to add some people in the ensemble, but I actually signed it like Al with the very, very vertical
Aww.
Letters. But I signed
nice.
It nicely, Justin, because I was playing nicely, nicely.
Aww.
This was for those who might not know how I got my name. I can just briefly go into that.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Squiggs came from another production of Guys and Dolls that I was doing. Again, playing nicely, nicely, Johnson. And the short version of it is that someone mistakenly called me Squiggly Wiggly instead of nicely, nicely. and then friends who knew me well knew that I draw squiggles, and so they shortened it to Squiggles and then eventually to Squiggs.
Oh, that's
and then
fun.
I started signing my artwork Squiggs around 1999, 1998, somewhere like
oh,
that.
Oh, very cool.
But yeah.
I didn't know that story.
Yeah, but then, so I, you know, I should show this, my early, very early rudimentary quote of Hirschfeld's Guys and Dolls through the filter of a very young and still growing Squiggs.
Have to know who to steal from.
You have
exactly.
to start
steal from steal from the best.
Well, but are there other artists that you are
absolutely
influenced by?
Absolutely, yes. I have often said that my work lends itself more to inspiration by Sam Norkin, you know, who for many years was a contemporary of Al, and did same kind of black and white line work, but had a very much more angular approach.
Yeah, exactly. I would say your work is closer to his.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think that's definitely the thing. Robert Risco, who's still fantastic, still
great,
working and is
genius.
Amazing. Robert DeMichel, who left us a couple years back, but did some posters for Broadway and such great work. And earlier artists like Miguel Covarrubias, who was a contemporary of Hirschfeld and who influenced him as well.
Who's he again?
Yeah, and you know, I think it's just observation. I think one of the things that any artist of any type has to develop is just chronic observation, like being a chronic observer,
right.
Being a student of life, and just keeping your eyes open, and finding things that that you like visually, and then just going with that. I think staying curious has been a big thing. You know, and something that informs my work is just knowing a lot about theater. You know, I haven't really branched out much beyond theater, to TV or film or politics or those sort of things. But I should also give a shout out to my friend Steve Brodner, who's an amazing political cartoonist, and who I've taken a couple classes from. And again, like my piano lesson days, I was an incredibly poor practicer. He was very kind. He teaches these classes at the School of Visual Arts. As continuing studies, and he was more than gracious that I was really awful at completing most of my assignments. We used one of my Broadway.com sketches as a classroom assignment.
That's great. Well, he has such a distinctive style.
He does,
and he's a genius, completely on his own.
Absolutely,
you don't look at his work and say, Oh, I see somebody else's. Yeah. You see Steve Brodner.
Yeah. He joined me when I went to see Michael Moore's show that was just on Broadway.
Oh, nice.
And, I thought he was just a great fit for him, just since he's locked into the political world and stuff. And so as we're getting ready for the show, Steve gets out his little pocket sketchbook and is sketching people in the audience, and I'm just geeking out. I'm like, I'm in the theater with Steve Brodner, and he's drawing people. I'm like, but he's also an incredibly gifted educator and an incredibly supportive and kind friend. So I'm grateful for him as well.
Wow. No, that's terrific. Political work, have you ever thought about doing any political work?
I've thought about it. I definitely am getting more political as times are passing and things are getting serious.
That's the world we're in.
Yeah, it's true. And I did I've done a couple little experiments. I drew a caricature of Trump as a Macy's hot air balloon.
Love it.
Very orange. it's something that actually it's about time that I step up and do some of this thing and getting a little bit more, vociferous about some of these issues. I certainly do, in my social media and that sort of thing, but it's time to, use the gifts in that direction.
Where can people find you on social media?
Yeah. I am on Twitter and Instagram at Call Me Squiggs, one word, Call Me Squiggs. And then on Facebook, I still have the Facebook page that I use to kind of jumpstart this whole thing. And that's Squiggs Knows His Lines.
Squiggs Knows His Lines.
Yeah. Double meaning. You get it?
Yeah, love it. Love it.
That's good. Okay, before we end, I have to ask, because I always like to ask people, what is your favorite Hirschfeld drawing?
Wow.
Besides the Stephen Sondheim one, because you are, it has a
certain... Yeah, you're saying a second favorite?
A second favorite.
Wow.
Or, just one that really, that you think about a lot, or maybe it's your password for logging into things.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you my login.
Just tell us all right
sure,
now.
Sure, sure, yeah. And here's my PIN number for my bank account.
Get your pens out, everybody.
Yeah. Why, goodness. Well, it's so funny. It's so hard to pick a favorite.
Oh, I realize this.
But there's certain iconic ones that I just love so much. And when you did the exhibit at the Museum of the City of New York,
the New York Historical Society.
I can never keep them straight. There's so many museums in New York City, and they all have New York in them.
Yeah, right.
But so when you did that one, when I walked into that room that had a key sketch from each decade,
right.
I just I wet myself a little bit because there's Richard Kiley in Man of La Mancha,
right.
Great one.
Zero Mostel and crew in Fiddler on the Roof. Mm-hmm. It was just my mind just exploded.
And Guys and Dolls.
The Guys and Dolls were there. The one that I stole from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those ones. One of the things
you don't
want
to admit that on tape. That would be bad. For the gates.
Yeah, I think so. I was influenced by, but they there's a technique that Al used in his compositions at times where there were multiple arms, multiple hands.
Oh yeah. And Danny Kaye being the
exactly,
most
and that's one. That's the one of the ones I was mentioned. But also there's a Lenny Bernstein.
Oh
one,
yeah.
You know. There was also the recent production of Fully Committed starring Jesse Tyler Ferguson, where I drew multiple arms with various phones and writing things and stuff like that. So definitely an inspiration from Mr. Hirschfeld.
Well, and Al's final drawing for the New York Times was of Tommy Toon and White Tie and Tails.
Yes, and that had multiple feet.
Oh yeah, the multiple feet. Yeah, and I have done that before as well. I've definitely quoted Hirschfeld with multiple tapping flurry of feet.
Yeah.
I think that could be a name of a movie, Flurry of Feet.
I think it was an Ice Capades, actually.
Yeah, I know. What came to my head was that Happy Feet movie.
Happy Feet with the penguins. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
So we're all in the same.
We are, yeah. But yeah, it's, and also, I love the color work of, especially the TV Guide covers.
I love the TV Guide covers.
Yeah, my roommate has, for some reason in the bathroom, had a photo of Ricardo Montalban and Hervé Villechaize from Fantasy Island.
Mm. Oh my
gosh.
And
it just made me laugh. And then I was like, oh, Hirschfeld drew almost exactly that same pose.
Oh, funny.
And so for Christmas, I found on eBay that TV Guide cover. We also have All in the Family, because we're the apartment's in Astoria, and that was set in Queens. So, yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's just fun. One of the things about when I first learned about Hirschfeld's work is just being able to connect the dots of knowing that, oh, my gosh, all those different things were made by this one person. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like movie posters and TV guide covers and illustrations in multiple publications, right, as well as the New York Times and, mm-hmm, and Broadway posters and that sort of thing.
Well, and he was fortunate. He had all those things to do. And I always feel bad for an artist like yourself who has... Your work is being seen by millions of people,
sure,
but you don't have this wide variety of magazines and publications.
The physical,
right?
Yeah.
Well, and we also have we don't have as much of a shared culture anymore.
Yes.
It's
right,
like you used to have the three channels plus PBS,
right?
You
know,
and so everybody watched them,
and everyone got the TV guide to find out when their programs are going to be on.
Right.
Definitely,
everyone got their news from sources like the New York Times.
Right. Mm-hmm. No.
You know, and now we have an embarrassment of riches of entertainment and news sources and that sort of thing. But you can really, you know, it's probably one of the things that's dividing us now. It's just,
right,
it's just having
just
so many.
Turn
you can pick
the
and
one
choose what
you want.
Yeah, exactly.
The one magazine you want.
Yeah, and you know, even as far as our entertainment choices, you know, you can stream, you know, countless shows and movies online.
Right.
You can, you know, it's much easier to find various types of music and stay in you know, in the pocket of the music industry that, you know, that you like,
right,
and stuff, instead of sharing it like when you watch it on TV. It's like so-and-so is on this variety show. It's like, oh, now the Beatles, you know.
Right. Or even listening to the radio. You know, we used to have that shared thing that,
right,
oh, that song was on the radio. I heard it on the radio, and you had to wait till it came back on.
Right.
You know, we don't have that now.
Exactly. And then, you know, again, shared experiences on the radio going even back further. It's like something like War of the Worlds, mm-hmm, you know, with, you know, where everyone had that, you know, freak out, that national freak out.
You're right.
And, you know, but that was, couldn't have been done today because not everyone listens to the same things.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah, it's just, times change and, you know, you kind of, you know, you hope to, that things will live on, like, you know, like a tradition like Al, you
right,
know, espoused.
But the tradition is living on.
Yeah.
Exactly. Through your work. And through other artists who do the work that you do. But I really think that if there was one person, I would say, is doing a lot of the kind of things that he was doing, you're doing it.
Wow,
In a way that is Squiggs. It is not, I don't think of it, you know, the Times, people used to always say, who's the next Hirschfeld?
Right.
And in fact, one time I got called into the Times, you know, Al was 98, and they said, well, what happens when he goes?
Right.
I said, he will stop doing drawings.
Yes. Well, I don't know.
Because they wanted to know who the next person was.
He was pretty superhuman.
But 98, I was pretty convinced that he wasn't going to go. So I didn't think about it too much. But of course, there wasn't going to be another Hirschfeld, just like there was never another Hirschfeld before him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same can be said about you.
Thank you.
There was never a Squiggs. There won't be a next Squiggs. There's only this Squiggs.
Right.
And we're all very fortunate to be seeing Broadway through your eyes and through your pen.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's really, I do hear that a lot. You know, I think any caricaturist that draws Broadway will say that they've been told that they're the next Hirschfeld,
right,
that sort of thing. And I always kind of recoil at that because there's never ever going to be another Al Hirschfeld.
Agreed.
And I usually kind of just turn it just a bit and I just say, hey, I'm so happy to be carrying on the traditions that he,
exactly,
you know, some created, you know, and that of, you know, it's so exactly when Al passed, I was out in California and performing, and I was doing a production of On the 20th Century. It was starring Bob Gunton and Carolee Carmello and Mimi Hines.
Oh,
he was the first person to take over for Barbra Streisand and Funny Girl.
Sure.
Fantastic people. And when I found out the news, I brought in all my Hirschfeld books that I'd been collecting over the years and just set them on the table in the dressing room. And it was nice to see people just kind of walking through and going, oh, yeah, I remember that. Or some people in our shows going, oh, yeah, there's me.
Right.
You know,
oh,
kind of a thing. So it was really, really great. And one of my greatest regrets is not being able to meet him.
Right.
But I think everyone got to meet Al a bit through his work because really it's seeing what an artist sees and what they're passionate about and what they choose to capture.
Exactly. I remember sometime he was in his 90s and Knopf wanted him to write a autobiography and he said, that's a whole nother career. I don't want to. And they were trying to convince him. I said, well, he's written an autobiography. You want to know what he saw and what he thought was important in the show? It's all there in the drawings.
Right.
And in a way, he sat third row on the aisle. That's where his opening night seat was.
Uh-huh.
And probably where he sat when he did most of his drawings in the theater because it's close enough. And that continues. I mean, when you told me you were in the third row, I thought, mm-hmm. oh my God, it's it's there.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because I don't typically request a certain place, but I love it when people know to put me on the aisle, especially if the aisle is to my right, because I'm right-handed.
Right.
I'm like, it's just, I'm not worried about bumping someone with my elbow if I'm sketching wildly with abandon in the theater. But yeah, that's, and I do, I feel that. Walking into those Broadway theaters, I'm like, okay, it's very likely that I've sat in numerous seats that I'll sat in before.
Mm.
And,
yes.
And it, you know, kind of just makes me feel good. So, no. Yeah.
Yeah, well, very your work cool. makes us feel good.
So, well, thank you. My goodness, thank you.
Thank you for coming around today and talking to us. We really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
As a first guest goes, I think we're going to have you now set
one.
The bar pretty high.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So if you want to see Squig's work or Justin's work, I don't know how you like to be referred to.
Whatever. I just don't call me late for dinner.
Yes. Yeah. It's Squig's Online.
Squigsonline.com, yes. Yeah. And the lightsofbroadway.nyc is where you can find the cards.
Lights of Broadway. Broadway.nyc. Okay. Yeah.
If you want to find the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, it's alhirschfeldfoundation.org. And on their social media.
On social media, we are the Al Hirschfeld Foundation on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at Al Hirschfeld. You can find the podcast at alhirschfeldfoundation.org/podcast. S is for Squig.
Oh my gosh. I was hoping that I'd be the S.
I was thinking, as we started wrapping it up, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a perfect
S is for Squigs.
Squigs. Please subscribe and rate and review on iTunes. I love to see a new review. I lose my mind.
Some nice ones.
Yes, we do. We get very nice ones from people. So, but it helps other people find the podcast.
Absolutely.
So let's bring it.
And I tell people
together.
About it too. So,
oh, good.
Yeah.
Word of mouth is always very good.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's it.
So thank you, Justin, for coming. Thanks everybody for listening, and we
thanks,
will see
everybody.
You when we do.
Yay!
Bye.
Bye.